6:05, welcome back. Welcome to hour number 3 of 3, the Todd Brummelkamp Show, along with Alex Kuhn, right now on all 3 KGYM frequencies. As a matter of fact, we'll be on all 3 frequencies, just not until 7 o'clock tonight. 6:45 is an early dismissal time. We're going to be stepping aside for high school basketball, a pair of games coming your way tonight. You can get the full schedule of postseason basketball games, both boys and girls, as we update it throughout the coming days and weeks at KGYMradio.com. You can also, while you're there, vote in our poll question. It's brought to you by our friends at Emil's Hideaway. Will the Iowa basketball team, the men that is, win another game this year? Yes or no? Hawkeyes losing on the road last night at Minnesota, getting down 22-2 early on, 8 turnovers in the first 8 minutes. And wouldn't you know it, they clawed and scrapped their way back into the ballgame, made it close, and then Minnesota closed out down the stretch. Minnesota, which had lost 9 games in a row heading into last night, beat the Hawkeyes. 319-366-1600. There really isn't much more you can say at this point, but when it's your job to say things about the team that is playing as poorly as the Hawkeyes are, there's no escaping the reality of it, is there?
No. And we've been dealing with this for weeks now, so it's not new at this point, and we're kind of used to it at this point, and I think that it's not just us. I'm not going to sit here and act like it's just us, but I think fans, even the players, the coaching staff, when something gets off to as bad of a start as it did and just continues to go the same way for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, eventually you're going to stop, at least fans-wise, you're going to stop letting it affect you, and I think that's where we are in the basketball season at this point.
319-366-1600. That is the Hertin & Stocker Jewelers text line. Hertin & Stocker, located in Iowa City at 101 South Dubuque Street on the Ped Mall. Over 70 years in business, there's a reason they were Iowa City's most trusted jeweler throughout that time. Stop on in and give them a look. 319-366-1600. Again, the number you can use to reach out to us throughout the broadcast, even though we are off a little early tonight. It is Thursday, and before we leave you, we have to do this.
It's now time for everyone's favorite weekly segment.
Would you rather know when you're going to die, or would you rather know how you're going to die?
But why would you even say that? For shock value?
Can you give yourself a ding?
It's as simple as a yes or no.
Of course you would. Who wouldn't?
Would you?
Alex, your friend McCaffrey, what would you do at the end of the regular season to begin preparing your program for next season? I'm giving you an open-ended invitation here. You can go any direction that you want to.
I would just evaluate everything. I would evaluate the coaching staff first and foremost, because that's what you know. That's what you're around every day. And you know the coaches probably better than your own family at this point. If you're Fran McCaffrey and that coaching staff, you're around them all the time. And you just have to figure out if there are any issues there. And you talked about those guys being good guys, and they are, but and they've been successful. As much as some people don't want to admit it, Fran McCaffrey had been successful at Iowa up until this season, and the defensive side of the basketball has to improve drastically, or no real improvement is going to be made next year. So that's where you start, and then you start looking at the junior college ranks for a guy that can give you 8 to 10 points per game, but can play on-ball perimeter defense. And you start looking at graduate transfers, who you could possibly bring in to do exactly what I just said. Give you 8 to 10 points per game on the wing, shoot the three ball, be a threat to shoot the three ball, can pass and not turn the ball over, and defend the three-point arc, and you start there. So I think there are going to be some roster shakeups. I don't think that the roster is going to stay 100% intact as to what it is this year. I'm obviously excluding Dom Yule, who is a senior. He will definitely not be with the program next year, but there are going to be some shakeups, whether it's with the players, the coaching staff, or incoming players as far as a junior college or a graduate transfer, you got to look for some help because, like you said, Todd, the status quo is not working.
Well, I think Alex hit on some important points in there, a lot of them. And I think somebody was on our show just about a week or so ago saying that, you know, the defense has to come from somewhere. And Fran has never been known as a defensive guru. And you guys have had the discussion. You look at that assistant coaching staff, and, you know, all three of those guys are well-liked. I'm not here to say who needs to go, you know, but I think you do probably need to bring in somebody who's going to have some sort of defensive, I don't know if scheming needs to be done differently or if the guys just need to be, you know, a little bit more aware, you know, taught defense a little differently. But you got to have some sort of defensive voice come into that room and help those guys just learn how to communicate better. And along those lines, this is kind of, when I hear stuff like this, I think it's kind of cheesy. But I think for this team in particular, they would be well served to go on one of those sort of retreats over the off season and you know, maybe I think I've heard of Navy SEALs working with teams before on and having them do all sorts of various tasks and challenges and stuff. They need something to help them learn how to communicate with each other and work for each other and want to, you know, and it goes back to that defense. It just, all season long, the guys aren't communicating with each other. They're not looking out for each other's backs. You've got to find some way to improve that, whether that's coaching or, you know, just off-season activities or both. You know, I think you definitely need to start there. And then with all that said, I think this team is just really eager to get this season over with, hit the reset button, because this is a really young team. It's been said over and over again. Another year's experience going into next year, there is talent on this team. And next year, they'll be a year wiser. They'll know what they're doing a little bit more. And, you know, I don't really think there's any reason to go into next season down on this team, really. Because, like I said, there is talent on this roster. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't come together this year. And Alex brought up another good idea, which is you're gonna look for JUCO guys, grad transfers. I think they could use a true point guard to come into that team because, you know, Connor McCaffrey's going to be healthy next year. Joe Wieskamp, he will be coming in and scoring the ball a little bit, but neither of those guys are really true point guards. McCaffrey will move the ball well. He's a smart kid, but he's not necessarily a true point guard. I think they could really use a guy like that. So there's a number of things that they should do, a lot of things to address, but I think more than anything else, just get out there and hit the reset button. Look forward to next year.
All right, Kyle, you're the Cleveland Browns. Who would you take at number one? It's never too early for an NFL draft question, is it, Alex?
No.
Okay.
I've actually thought a lot about this because I'm looking at the Browns and their offseason situation right now. You know, they've got a lot of cap space. They obviously have a lot of picks, and when I look at the Browns, they're in a special circumstance because it's a top-heavy draft. There's a few guys who I think could be impact players right away. We actually talked to Ben Albright a couple weeks ago when Alex and I were doing the show, and I asked him about taking Saquon Barkley first overall. He called it ludicrous. He totally dismissed it, and he made some good points. You know, history has shown taking a running back high is not super wise, let alone first overall, especially in this day and age. But the Browns have the first overall pick and the fourth overall pick, and the two teams in between that, the Giants and the Colts, they're both liable to take Saquon Barkley, especially I think, you know, the Colts. Barkley would take a lot of pressure off Andrew Luck. They could take a lineman, but, you know, that aside, if I'm the Browns, I look at what the Cowboys just did a couple years ago. I know that I've got talent on my defense. The offensive line isn't terrible. I'm going to take Saquon Barkley first overall, knowing that there's going to be a good quarterback left over for me at fourth. I know that is a not popular opinion, but that is what I would do.
When you have the number one overall pick, of course, there's a lot of pressure not to blow it. But the Browns have done so in the past. When there's a decision to be made, it always seems like they're making the wrong decision. And I see a lot of people thinking that Sam Darnold is the answer out of USC. I'm not sold on Sam Darnold as a franchise quarterback. I think there's far too much inconsistency there, and he still needs some work to become that style of quarterback. And Josh Allen, not sold on him. I think that probably Josh Rosen is the best overall talent at quarterback of anybody, and you're not going to spend a number one overall pick on Baker Mayfield. The problem with this draft right now is there's at the positions where you usually see the teams taking top end talent or drafting number one overall. There's not a lot of players at those positions. I don't think there's a clear cut franchise quarterback. There aren't a whole lot of tackles, and there isn't a big. There isn't that marquee wide receiver in the draft. This draft is very deep at guard and center, and you're not going to draft a guard or a center number one overall. So I think at this point you have to get a quarterback, and a guy like Bradley Chubb, a defensive end out of NC State, is a guy who could fit in across standing across from Myles Garrett on the other end, more of a big physical defensive end to go along with Myles Garrett's pass rushing ability. Then at four, you're going to have somebody available. It might be Baker Mayfield. It might be Josh Rosen. It might be Sam Darnold or Josh Allen. We'll see where he gets drafted, but there will be quarterbacks available at number four. You got to take the best overall player, and I don't think Sam Darnold is it.
Perhaps appropriately, we'll keep it with you, Alex. Would you say the Olympics have been a success so far for the United States?
I think that the women's hockey was one of the make or break events for the United States heading into these Olympics. And I think a lot of people expected Norway to run away with a medal count. They're doing that. And I think they're 10 ahead of Germany. They have 34, if memory serves me right, they have 34 medals. Germany has 24. The U.S. got off to a slow start. Some of their athletes underperformed. But Michaela Schifrin got a gold medal. Shaun White and Chloe Kim and Red Gerard dominated in the snowboarding events, and Jamie Anderson as well. And they got the monkey off their back of winning the gold medal in women's hockey. The one thing that where I feel like they lost out, and I don't mean to get on my soapbox, and this might be a little bit off topic, is in men's hockey. It was a hockey league in their own country that sabotaged their chances of winning a gold medal and basically handed it to the Russians. It looks like the Russians will win the gold medal in men's hockey. And the National Hockey League said, you know what, this isn't a good way to grow our sport. But if they take anything away from these Olympics, look at the fact that a women's hockey game at 10 o'clock at night controlled the ratings last night. Got a 2.06.
Starting at 10 o'clock.
Starting at 10 o'clock.
Finishing sometime around 1 in the morning.
1 in the morning. Got a 2.06 overnight rating, which was, I think the Stanley Cup final last year averaged a 2.7 overnight rating for each of their games. So the NHL proved that they're clueless, because I can't imagine how many non-hockey fans would have gotten into it and then gotten a glimpse of all of the young talent that the USA Hockey has right now, and they didn't get that chance. So I think they lost out in that sense, but the U.S. women winning the gold medal kind of made the Olympics for the United States.
Alex, I think reading between the lines, you would say it hasn't quite been a smashing success for the U.S. yet. You're giving them an incomplete.
Well, no, I think at this point it's been a pass. A B minus.
It's like gym class in elementary school. Pass,
pass fail.
Satisfactory, unsatisfactory.
Exactly. It's been fine. Like I said, there have been some underperformers. Lindsey Vonn, Michaela Schifrin was going to go for four medals, I think, and she got two, but that had to do with the weather. Nathan Chin was the men's figure skating phenom. He didn't medal. So there have been some underperformers, but at the end of the day, it's been fun to watch, at least for myself.
I guess I'll preface this by saying my following of this year's Olympics has been closer to Todd than Alex. I would call myself a very casual observer of this Olympics. With that said, I think America, you know, they've had a few young new stars arise in your Michaela Schifrin, your Red Gerard, your Chloe Kim. But then I really just look at, you know, the biggest name that they sent, Sean White. He got his gold, and that has to be a big victory. And then you look at what happened last night. The U.S., you know, the women's hockey team beats Canada, which was, from what I understand, a pretty momentous victory. And that at least gives you something to hang your hat on. And so I'd say, as a casual observer, I'd say it's been a pretty good success.
I think they've added 9 medals in the last 2 days. And they'll have another one in curling.
That's right, Canada. You're going to get another medal in curling, and you're not.
Your sport.
Alex, you're an owner of a professional sports team.
Okay.
It's a team that seemingly is going nowhere. Would you tank, or would you try to remain as competitive as possible? Tanking has been a very, very in-the-news subject recently, especially with both the Blackhawks and the Bulls looking to seemingly improve their draft and lottery positions.
Are you
okay with the idea of tanking?
For the most part, I think that it's part of sports and you can't really control it. But I do think that it is somewhat of a ridiculous business model, if you will, and it's what separates sport from business. And people say, well, business or sports are a business, and they are. But could you imagine at KGYM, you know what? We want to get rid of all of our talent here. We're going to do a terrible show.
Yes, I can.
We're going to do an awful show so we all get fired.
Really not that difficult for me to imagine.
So we can bring in all new parts. From that standpoint, I look at it and it's hard for me because I think about how much money fans pay to go through the turnstiles and how much money they spend on memorabilia and how much investment they put in time and energy wise into the teams, and nobody wants to sit through for the NBA team in question would be the Dallas Mavericks. No one wants to sit through a 17-win regular season. But at the end of the day, if it can make you a championship team, it's hard to argue with that if a championship is the payoff. But a lot of times, it's not. You look at the Pittsburgh Pirates. They tanked. They built back up. And they lost 2 wild card games. Their payoff was 1 divisional series against the Cardinals and losing 2 wild card games, and they're tanking again. So if 15 teams are tanking, that means probably 12 or 13 of those fan bases aren't going to see the payoff of that tanking.
This is an interesting question because from one standpoint, as a fan, and if I were an owner of a team, I'll say up front, yeah, I'm a huge fan of tanking. You know, you look at the Cubs, you look at the Astros, you look at a team like the Philadelphia 76ers, who I think are on the brink of really being a good team. If done well, tanking, you know, it doesn't have to take that long, maybe a 2-3-4-year process. I think transparency with your fan base is an essential part of it because you don't, I think as long as your fans know that there's a plan and there is light at the end of the tunnel, I think it's an easier pill to swallow than it's been made out to be. And I mean, look at the Browns right now. Like we were just talking about them. They've got the 1st overall pick, the 4th overall pick, a ton of picks after that, lots of cap space. They've failed at the rebuild over and over again. But maybe a different team with different ownership put in that position, You know, you can do a really good rebuild in one offseason doing it that way and really put yourself in a pretty decent position. So I am a fan of tanking, but if you look at it from the league side, you know, it's a big topic in baseball. It's a big topic in basketball right now. And like Alex said, you know, as a Cubs fan, at the time when the Cubs were going through their rebuild, their tank process, you know, I was a huge fan of it because it felt like they were one of the only ones doing it. You know, they're early to the party. And it was kind of a little bit of a secret amongst the Cubs fans, like, oh, you guys don't even know what's coming. But now it has become, it's definitely not a secret. The concept is out, and it, like Alex just said, you've got close to 10 teams who are really not being shy about the fact that they're not going to be good, and they're not really even going to try. And it's to that point in baseball, it's to that point in basketball, and football is the hardest sport to tank and do a proper rebuild. So it's not as bad in football, but it has become so widespread across all the leagues that from the league standpoint, it's something that, you know, they definitely have to, they've got to put an end to somehow, just because it's not good for the integrity of the competition.
Alex, one last one. Would you say Donovan Jackson's game last night in Iowa State's loss to TCU was one of the best performances of the year? 27 points. I'm saying anything we've seen, Iowa, Iowa State, you and I. 27 points from a young man who lost his father, tried to put that team on his back, played through his grief. Iowa State loses by 6 points last night. Jackson, by the way, will not be dressing on Saturday against West Virginia, so Iowa State's only going to have 6 players for that game.
I promise I'm not trying to be funny when I say this, but that was the best basketball moment, college basketball moment of the year in the state of Iowa. And there aren't many to choose from. I get that. Most of them have been achieved by Iowa State with their top 25 victories. But for somebody to just a couple of days later lose somebody, their father at age 52, far too young to lose any parent, and to come back a few days later and put together that performance when he knew that his team needed him. And he had to kind of muster up the emotion to go out on the basketball court and lead his team when 2 of their better players were going to be sidelined due to injury, and but both of them probably for the rest of the year. And they only had 7 guys on the bench, and they're playing at home against one of the better offensive teams in the Big 12. He knew his team needed him. He knew that the school, the fan base who showed up to watch that game, despite the fact that they've only won 4 games in conference this year, needed him. And he showed up and put together the best performance, and I think the spotlight performance of what has been a rough basketball season in the state of Iowa.
Definitely one of the better moments, I'd have to say. You know, we've seen this before. It's a terrible tragedy to lose a relative, especially. You know, it's never good, but especially mid-season while you're trying to focus on games and stuff like that, you know, it's never. I always respect the hell out of these guys who not only come out and play, because like Alex said, his team was shorthanded as it was. Team needs him, so he makes it out there. He plays, but also plays extremely well. I wish that they could have won that game just to give him that extra special moment. You know, yeah, I wish they could have got that game, but yeah, you got to respect the hell out of Donovan Jackson for last night.
Yeah, my mind goes back to Brett Favre playing the Raiders after his father passed away and the amazing game that he had. If you know anything about Brett Favre, you know how much Irv played a role in his life. 6:28. We'll take a quick timeout. Kyle's going to remain in the studio with us. He'll have your final Midwest One Bank Big Board update of the night. We are off early for high school basketball, so just about 10 minutes to go here on the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn. All 3 KGYM frequencies back after this.
Now at Menards, save big money on your next project with 11% off everything. Whether it's a new garage or a kitchen remodel, you'll get 11% off all of it. The bigger the project, the bigger the savings. There's no limit to how much you can save with 11% off everything now at Menards. 11% savings are a mail-in rebate, Good through February 24th. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Cedar Valley Entertainment presents Saturday, June 23rd. Live at the U.S. Cellular Center in Cedar Rapids. T-Pain, Ja Rule, and Mike Jones. Tickets on sale now at the U.S. Cellular Center box office, Ticketmaster.com, or by calling 1-800-745-3000. T-Pain, Ja Rule, and Mike Jones at the U.S. Cellular Center, Saturday, June 23rd. Get your tickets now.
There are still companies that care. Companies that have your back. Companies that provide stability for you and your family. PMX Industries in Cedar Rapids is one of those companies. You can start at $17.27 an hour with great benefits you'd expect from a company that treats you like family. Sometimes it's the small things like holiday parties, summer picnics, and movie parties that speak volumes about your work family. Learn more about the PMX family at ipmx.com.
Each week, KGYM recognizes a local sports team for the win in the community. The Metro Spotlight is brought to you by Carpenters Union, Local 308 in Cedar Rapids, and Local 1260 in Iowa City.
Baseball was being played today in the state of Florida. The Minnesota Twins taking on the Minnesota Golden Gophers in an exhibition game that I believe is currently still going on. If you have Fox Sports North and want to catch a glimpse of the Twins, they made a roster move earlier today, outriding JT Shagwa, one of their relievers, off the roster, which caught some people by surprise. He was expected to be a possible arm in the bullpen mix this year, but baseball will be here before you know it. The actual spring training games start tomorrow. Are you wearing any Cardinals clothing tomorrow, Alex, to mark the beginning of... Okay.
No, I will not.
I'm cubbing it up tomorrow.
Cubs,
I want you to know.
Right,
well,
now.
I've got the Cubs jacket on today, the sweater, whatever you want to call it. Tomorrow I will be rocking some Cubs gear, though, for the start of spring training.
I gotta pull my Cardinal stuff out of, I think it's all at my parents' house. I don't have any of it here.
And I am giving you permission, listeners, to wear baseball paraphernalia to work tomorrow. Your bosses can all talk to me. Dress code be damned. Right, Kyle? Who cares? Kyle's got a Midwest One Bank Big Board update for you. Midwest One, with over 40 locations across the corridor for all your banking needs.
The Iowa men were on the road with Minnesota last night, and because they went down by 20 in the first 9 minutes of the game, a 63-point second half wasn't good enough to get the win as they fell 86-82. The Hawkeyes now find themselves 3-14 in the Big Ten with just one game left, and a loss against Northwestern on Sunday would give them the worst conference record in program history. The last time they had three wins was 1963, and they've never, ever had 15 losses. The Iowa women, though, are picking up the slack. They won their sixth in a row last night over Rutgers in overtime, 77-67. They trailed by as many as 11 in the fourth quarter, but a Kathleen Doyle three tied it at 59 with just 9 seconds remaining, and the Hawkeyes dominated the overtime period. Chase Coley scored 20, but the story, as usual, was Megan Gustafson with 27 points and 14 rebounds. She leads the nation in scoring and is fifth in rebounding, and last night broke Iowa's 30-year-old single-season scoring record, as well as her own rebounding record from last season. Something to keep an eye on, if Michigan beats Maryland tonight, the Hawkeyes clinch a top-four seed in the Big Ten tournament and a double bye. Iowa State also lost last night, 89-83 to TCU. The Cyclones actually led at halftime, but with only seven players active, didn't have the depth to hold on. They now clinch last place in the Big 12. We're going to be off at 6:45 tonight for a couple boys' sub-state semifinals. We'll have Solon hosting Fairfield on the South Gym and Marion at West Delaware on the North Gym, as well as the Main Gym.
Yeah, and Iowa State goes from 7-6 Saturday against West Virginia because Donovan Jackson's father's funeral will be Saturday, and he's going to be in attendance, as he should be. I have always said that you have to put family ahead of virtually everything else, and I know that comes up. We've had discussions before with people skipping out on weddings to go to football games and things like that. That's not my DNA. I've never been one to turn my back on family. Funerals, obviously, a little bit of a different story than weddings and whatnot, but no choice there. And that was very powerful last night. I don't know if you guys caught the post-game news conference where Donovan Jackson starts to break down mid-response and Steve Prohm is there and basically puts his hand on his shoulder and he's going to interject. And Donovan said, no, I've got to get through this. And he powers through answering the question. I thought, what a strong young man that was. And again, our thoughts and our wishes are with him. His father passed away earlier this week at the age of 52. For those of you who are unaware of what is going to prevent Donovan Jackson from participating in Saturday's game, Iowa State, West Virginia Saturday. UNI's closing things out with Missouri State, and the Hawkeyes have to wait until Sunday. 6:30 Sunday night. What do you think the attendance is going to look like at Carver Hawkeye Arena for a 6:30 Sunday night regular season finale against Northwestern, a Northwestern team that's playing like Northwestern used to play for so many years? Two teams playing out the string going into the Big Ten tournament next week.
It's not going to be great. And I think that both of these teams fall in the category of disappointing, but Northwestern at times has found some ability to reel off a couple of wins here and there. They're 16-14. They've been up and down, and during the course of conference play, mostly down. But I found something interesting last night, Todd. You were watching the Big Ten Network call of the Iowa game.
Yeah,
right?
Joe Crispin, yeah. The former Penn State guard, was the color analyst,
and he said something that was, and he kind of stopped himself from saying this because it's the Big Ten Network. We've talked about that, but he brought up the fact that
can't be too critical. You'll get emails from people. Yeah,
he brought up the fact that Minnesota and Iowa both had disappointing season, but Minnesota had some things out of their control, and it sounded like he started to say Minnesota has excuses as to why they are struggling. Iowa, on the other hand, and instead of saying doesn't have any excuses, he took the glass half full approach of saying has a bunch of things that are correctable. And that's just basically what this whole season has been. Decent expectations, and they've varied heading into the year. Some people thought that this is an NCAA tournament team. Some thought that it was an NIT team. But I didn't think most people thought that they would have one of their worst seasons ever. And it just hasn't shown many flashes of breaking out of whatever is ailing them this season. And we've been talking about it for it seems like a year now, but it's only been a couple of months. And this offseason is going to be huge. That's why we're wondering, are there going to be changes? What is the staff going to look like? What is the roster going to look like next year? What is this team going to look like defensively, first and foremost? Because if that doesn't change, then not much is going to change. And we're starting, you asked the question earlier, Todd, what would be satisfactory next year? And I'm seeing a lot of people on the Hurtina Stockers text line say they have to make it to the NCAA tournament. That's not going to be easy, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
80% of the people who answered the poll question today at KGYMradio.com say no, Iowa will not win another game this season. They should beat Northwestern on Sunday, and then they'll probably go to New York and lose because, quite frankly, Fran McCaffrey's teams have been terrible at the Big Ten tournament. Terrible. There's no other way to sugarcoat it for people out there. And we found out, or I found out anyway, though, they exist. They want everything sugarcoated and think that we're being a big meanie by saying the team is not very good. And look, you can face the facts or ignore them. I've always chosen to face the facts. And I think it's just a frustrating season all around. And I get where fans are coming from. And the end is near. And then we can sit back and, you know what? Let's watch an NCAA basketball tournament that doesn't have any Iowa teams in it.
What is that going to be like?
Fun. I think we should do something fun. Again, I love the idea of doing an NCAA watch party and turning it into sort of a funeral for a terrible basketball season.
Pour one out.
Everybody should dress in black, show up, and, yeah, commiserate over your shared misery, whether you and I, Iowa State or Iowa fan. We could all come together. Nothing unites those fan bases like collective misery. No. And this season was one miserable experience, pretty much from start to finish, with the exception of Iowa beating the German All-Stars.
I was going to, when we were doing the Alex Kidd Olympic update today, I was going to...
AKOU, as I was it's referred cut, to within the building.
Cut up the clip of Love It or Leave It last week, me saying that the U.S. was going to win the gold medal, but then I thought that Kyle or yourself might dig up the clip of me saying that right before conference play that you and I had a really good chance to get an at-large bid into the NCAA tournament. Old takes exposed.
Hey.
Hashtag sizzling.
There were folks out there in the media that thought Iowa was going to win 25 games this year. I mean, there's no sense in pointing out at this point that that was kind of off the mark.
Yeah, it was.
But I have no explanation for how this team got to where it is right now. And I think there's some explanations that are needed, and I don't know whether we're ever going to get them, but it started with Christian Williams leaving the team the day before the first exhibition game of the year. And I think from that point on, there's been a little bit of discord. And up until the last home game, where you just see Fran McCaffrey getting mad during the timeouts and the shouting and the screaming and the slamming of the clipboards. It just seems like it's being tuned out now. It's going in one ear and it's going out the other ear. And I don't know, maybe you magically hit the reset button at the end of the year and next year's completely different. But if you're starting to lose them now, I don't see how you get them back next year. But I like the idea of doing some sort of team building, team bonding during the offseason and trying to get everybody on the same page, because they're not in the same book right now. They're in completely different sections of the library.
I like that idea, but I like to combine it with John Bonenkamp's idea as well, where maybe you do that in about 3 months. Let this team kind of get away from each other for a while.
Nick on the text line says, I know Iowa's been bad this year, but so is Iowa State. You're beating the Iowa season to death. Well, I know my audience. I've got the numbers in front of me. I know how many people like Iowa. I know how many people like Iowa State. I'm talking to more Iowa fans than I am Iowa State fans. That would be like a hamburger joint deciding that it's going to make pushing a chicken sandwich its main goal. You're a hamburger joint. Sell hamburgers. Unfortunately, the hamburgers haven't been tasting very good here. I don't know where I'm going with that. I think I'm hungry. We're tanking. Final 30 seconds here. We're tanking, trying to get the number one overall pick tomorrow. It should have been Rob Howe when we did the draft. He went undrafted. Rob is going to be here with us tomorrow. The big hour, 6 o'clock hour, brought to you by our friends at Hawkeye Title and Settlement. Plenty more to get to on the program tomorrow, a Friday edition of the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn. We're going to step aside right now, though. Exciting high school postseason basketball action is on the way now. Action.